Welcome to Cider Chat. It's episode 240. And in this episode, we'll be looking at whether to rack or not to rack, and, well, what is racking anyways when making cider?
Going up, going up, going up, going up, going up.
My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am both the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where I speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And I'm hoping if you have tuned into this podcast that you too are one who enjoys a good glass of cider. And we certainly have many great glasses throughout the archives of Cider Chat. In fact, I'm feeling a little nostalgic right now. That's why I'm playing the original music that I kicked off with Cider Chat so many years ago. I'm just thinking of that time when I was able to like hang out with people and we're passing glasses around and, you know, in close quarters and going to festivals and doing cider weeks, like the upcoming cider week that's going to be happening in the Finger Lakes, like the first week of October, kicking off October 3rd, I believe. I may be wrong, but I think that's true. Look it up. Get out there if you can. I spent my fall last year, 2019. It's really hard to like keep it all together right now, isn't it? A little bit with the coronavirus. But I did. I was out there last year in the Finger Lakes, did a bunch of recordings, and I'll put a link in the show notes to those recordings with, I think it was like seven recordings in total, both with Gregory Peck at Cornell. So if you're looking into pomology, he is a professor there. And just a wonderful man. That was a very like bucket moment for me, bucket list moment, I should say, in getting to speak to Gregory. So yes, there's a whole bunch of makers out there. You should check it out. And that's what I'm missing. I'm missing being able to go out into the world, seeing people, sharing cider. And as such, I've been kind of like moping along. I haven't even bottled my cider from 2019 yet. I've caked some of it. But I haven't had any reason to crack the kegs because I'm just not seeing people. So enough about me and my sad sack, because I'm sure you're feeling the same way. It's tough times, and that's why we have Cider Chat. So if you haven't had the opportunity yet to subscribe to this here podcast, please do, because we are counting down the episodes now to episode 250. And I'm thinking we're going to have the nose on that particular chat to help me reflect over the past year, which has been fantastic, and just bring us into our vision looking forward, at least for me and cider. So that's always a fun time, and that'll be probably episode 250. It's only like 9 episodes counting down. Wow, right. So that's great news. Oh, and I just got a little text in. I see that's you probably don't realize this, but that's the medlars. They're out in the orchard and doing a little picking of the medlars right now. If you don't know what medlars are, they're palms. And we have the medlars, who are part of the Talking Palms on this here podcast. But right now, I'm just in the studio here with Mr. Quince. Mr. Quince, would you like to say hello to Ciderville?
Hello.
Mr. Quince, is that all you have? I mean, you know, there's a lot of quince being fermented this fall. In fact, I have to go down to the bush that is not too far away from home here and catch up with some of the quinces and pick and start getting ready to ferment those this year. Don't you? You don't have anything else to say?
I think you have an email that came in from Maxim in Russia.
Oh, Mr. Quince, you are such a taskmaster. What you don't know, Ciderville, is when the microphones go off, Mr. Quince has quite a comedic flair and is hoping to do a little bit of stand-up comedy. But, you know, when the microphones go on, some of us are more shyer than others. So I'm going to take his advice. Yes, Mr. Quince, do you have something that you'd like to add?
I'm going to act like a tree and leave.
You're going to act like a tree and leave, hey? Okay. Well, please don't leave until we finish producing this week's episode 240, because I need you. You are my right-hand quince here.
Roger that.
Okay, and now I'm going to act like an engine and run. We're going to take a little pause, and then we'll come back with that letter from Maxim.
Walking through the orchards.
If you haven't listened to the four-part series on Russian cider makers, I highly recommend tapping into that, because not only will it give you an update of what's happening in that country, but it'll also tell you about the people there, which is so disconnected to politics as we know it on the daily news. These are just people like people everywhere who love apples, love cider, love good food, good life, and having a good time. And through that episode recording, which I recorded earlier this year when I was in Normandy, France at Cider Expo, I got to meet up with Maxim Breck, who also happens to be a patron of this here podcast. You could become a patron too by going to Patreon, that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And we keep in touch, and he's been very busy this summer because he and his wife just had a baby boy whose name is Theodore. And it's been busy. It's been a busy life. So up went his episode that I recorded, and he's just now getting back to me. And let me share a little bit about that conversation. He wrote, "I had real joy during our conversation and while listening to the podcast episodes with us. You are an incredible interviewer, and I hope we will all see you soon in Moscow. I believe there will be an occasion, like a big cider festival, and I'm eager to show you the city." Oh, big cider festival in Moscow, I'm there. Anyways, he goes on with saying that he is rebuilding his cidery right now, and his mother-in-law, who owns the barn and garage, was very generous in allowing me to occupy her buildings. He's moved in stainless steel fermenters and temperature control, so finally, he's able to match his needs and is going to make several interesting things. I just want to say this guy is a tremendous cider maker, at least what I tasted thus far. He studied over in the UK, took a course. Check out his episode. I'll put a link in the show notes to that and the rest of the Russian makers. He goes on with, "I have my first apples of Bulmer's Norman from trees that I grafted 3 years ago. I think they are more acidic here, but they definitely contain tannins. A little bit later, I'm going to measure every property of juice, and we will see how this variety reveals our climate. Also, one more cider-only pub opened in Moscow called Apple and Perry. They have a real huge assortment of good English ciders, more than 200 labels. So anyone traveling to Moscow, that is a great tip and good news." He says, "Ciders in retail stores have now moved from the farthest place in like the back shelf area to the entrance. It is really growing here. We and my colleagues are trying to change the law and separate definitions of cider from fresh pressed juice and the other ones with different titles on the labels, such as other cideries that are adding adjuncts." I think that's what he's talking about. "This should help us," and they're really calling themselves like traditionalists or naturalists, "to be more exposed to the audience." So there you have it. It sounds like it's really happening in Russia. We want to have a little bit of
going up.
Yes, it is going up in Russia. Well done, Maxim. Thank you so much. Best of luck with the new baby and the harvest. The fall is here. Looking forward to the next glass that we could raise together. Yes, there is a reason, and that is simply that we like cider. We like drinking it. I love the people that are in the cider community. I love walking in the orchard, smelling the blossoms. It brings me through the seasons of the year. It's absolutely delightful, and it's also really fun to make cider. Now, if you're new to this game, I really recommend that you go back a few episodes to episode 236 and listen to the episode on how to make cider at home. That brings you through the steps of making a 1 gallon jug of cider. So that would be the minimum amount that I would ferment and probably have any luck with. And people do it all the time. So listen to that episode, and that will bring you through the steps to begin cider making at a very basic level. I'm going to step it up now and talk to the topic of racking. And racking is where you start clarifying the liquid. Because when you get fresh pressed apple juice, it's going to be cloudy. There's going to be apple particles floating around. It's just been essentially like squeezing the juice of an orange. You'll get some pulp in there, right? The same thing happens with an apple. So typically it's going to be cloudy. And that cloudiness will clarify over time. Certainly after primary fermentation, what happens is the heavy precipitants drop down to the bottom of the vessel. What's happening is there's a separation between the solids and the liquid. So the liquid's going to be on the top of your vessel and the solid's going to be on the bottom. It's all floating down. And that bottom layer is called the lees, and that's spelled L-double-E. And this happens after your primary fermentation. Once you had that rapid foaming scene happening where the yeast started gobbling up the sugars, and then after a couple of days it starts settling down and settling down. You have the airlock on your cider, it settles down, and you start getting that separation. Now, depending on the yeast you use, that can impact the amount of clarity that you have after primary fermentation. For the most part, whether you're doing like a wild yeast ferment or you are using a store-bought cultured yeast, your cider at this point is still going to be a bit cloudy. And some people just drink it like that, which is absolutely fine. And then there is some of us who like to condition a bit longer. Now, for myself, I have both racked my cider and not racked my cider. So let's first talk about why you should rack your cider.
Walking through the orchards.
The first reason, and probably the most significant reason, that we want to get the lees out of there, if we're going to be holding onto our cider for a while and allowing it to condition, is because the lees, left to their own devices just to sit there over time, will promote off flavors in your cider. So that's a simple piece there. If you don't want off flavors and it could taste kind of musty, kind of yeasty in a not so great way, you want to get rid of the lees. The second reason is we rack the liquid off of the lees into a new clean vessel to continue help clarifying the cider. Because we all feel really good when we have that beautiful bottle in our hands and we say, oh my goodness, that's so clear. It's so bright. It just is so delightful in the glass. It's just bubbles and or it's still whatever, but it's clear. We like clear things. It's a visual that comes to mind that really matters. And it certainly matters if you're ever going to enter your cider into a competition. That could be one of the things that you get marked off because it doesn't have that kind of clarity. And if you haven't been racking your cider over time and on top of it, by the time you bottle it, if there's any kind of residual lees or, you know, those dead yeast cells or other precipitants, it will show up in your bottle. And I can attest to that. I have a number of bottles that have a little bit of schmutz on the bottom. And, you know, I don't know. It's not that big of a deal. But that's just one kind of idea. Now, with that said, there is another piece here, is that sometimes that is something that people want. And I know a number of very fine makers who don't mind having that in their bottle. And these are commercial makers. And they'll actually encourage you to, you know, tip the bottle back and forth and bring that yeast back up into solution. Now, mind you, this isn't like there. It's not like a huge amount. It's just enough. And so, you know, to each their own. That's the beauty of cider making. It's really what you want. But the number one reason, especially during that primary stage of cider making, right after the primary fermentation, is to get the bulk of the lees off of there. And then that's like the gross lees, and then you're going down to fine lees. And that's very different than the gross lees. I'm not going to get too technical. I'm going to refer you to an episode with Kurt Scheer called Not All Lees Are Gross. That was a great episode recorded at Cider Days a number of years ago.
Dancing in the streets.
If you like dancing in the streets, then you're going to enjoy Batonnage, because that really stirs things up, kind of like dancing in the streets. But kidding aside, Batonnage is a technique where you decide not to rack your cider. And this is something that cider makers, certainly in the U.S., are taking on more and more as they learn about this. And I've really seen this develop over the past couple of years. One is because of Ryan Monkman, a Fieldbird Cider in Ontario, who is a good friend of Cider Chat, and my good friend, when I say that, of Cider Chat. And he has just done a number of amazing talks on this subject, taking his technical skills from winemaking and bringing it into cider, and has shown us the benefits of Batonnage. So I'm going to refer you to an episode that we talked specifically about this, but allow me now to give you a snapshot of what Ryan and I were discussing. So with Batonnage, you are stirring the lees back up into solution, and the benefits are real. They're very real. But there's one little catch. You need at least 9 months up to a year of holding that cider, conditioning it, and using the technique of Batonnage. To do it for a less amount of time, you're not going to get the same benefits. The first benefit it goes back to the nanoproteins, in that they release into the cider and provide a perception of sweetness and body without the sugar. Having done Batonnage and not Batonnage with my cider, I really notice a difference, especially if I'm working with some apples that don't have a lot of complexity to it. They're not your classic cider apples that are just so sought after, like a Kingston Black or Arkansas Black or Dominot, you know, et cetera, Bulmer's Norman. Those types of apples that, you know, you probably don't even have to worry about Batonnage there. You could do it, and I imagine people will be doing that, if not now or later. But for the short term, for many makers like myself who really have to seek out cider apples because they're not highly produced at this point, Batonnage is a great way to increase the mouthfeel into your cider and provide complexity. So that's the number one reason why I like doing Batonnage. Number two is that it actually prevents oxidation. The yeast coming into solution is consuming oxygen. And so it's kind of a protector in that way. And it therefore protects the flavor components in the cider too. And the number three reason to do Batonnage is it's a really cool word and it's fun to do. And then you don't have to worry about taking out the lees. You just leave them in there and you stir them up. With that said, though, you want to have a particular regimen or procedure, a schedule, if you will, of your Batonnage. You can't just say, I'm going to do it haphazardly 1 week and then skip like 5 weeks and get back to it. Don't do it that way. You have to be very regimented. And I start doing Batonnage about 2 weeks after primary fermentation. And then I do it once per week, actually twice per week for like a month, maybe 2 months. And then you start slowing it down. So you're really initially making sure that that yeast stays in solution on the early days of the cider. And if you're looking over the term of a year, then over time, you know, it'll start dropping down and dropping down. And remember, your cider is clarifying as it's dropping down all those precipitants, the gross lees and the finer lees that are coming down out of solution. So over time, by the end of the year, you're doing it like once a month. And I have had really good luck. And even when I've had some headspace, I shouldn't probably say this, but some headspace in my oak barrel, maybe it's just the magic of oak, which does have a lot of magic in it. My cider did fine. So there you have it. The reason why not to rack your cider is because you would be doing the technique called batonnage.
Smelling all the blossoms.
Let's talk about the equipment needed to rack your cider, because for the most part, that's exactly what most cider makers do to help clarify their cider and get it off the lees and the fine lees as the cider making continues on from month to month until you finally get to bottling. And so you're going to need the following. You're going to need a second vessel of equal size from the first that you could transfer that liquid into. You're going to need a food grade hose to siphon with. And you could just get that online or at your local fermenter shop, if you will. And that is both a flexible hose, and if you're lucky, it's going to have a very stiff tube that attaches to the hose. And that stiff tube goes into your first vessel with the cider. And that has like a little cap on the bottom to keep it up out of the lees. But one little tip that I do, I always have extra clothespins sitting around that clamp on perfectly to that stiff tube that goes into the cider for racking. And I'm able to adjust the height of the tube going into the carboy. And by just sliding it up and down on my clothespin. I mean, I just love using household things like that. And that way, when I start my racking, I don't plunge that tube all the way down to the bottom. I don't want to stir up the lees. I'm trying to avoid that as much as possible. So that's key. And all these things need to be sanitized. And you could always use that same stopper and airlock that you had on the first vessel. Once you clean it up, that's fine, or have an extra one of those. And then another key thing that you do not want to forget about, maybe this is the most important thing, is extra juice or cider to top off your carboy. Because if you're moving it from one vessel to the other and you have like an inch of lees on the bottom, well, you're going to be very surprised at how much headspace you end up with after you do the racking. And each time you rack it, you're going to need to top off the liquid. Now, if you're using apple juice, fresh pressed apple juice, I recommend, and you don't want to have it kick into fermenting again, well, boil it for a little bit, right? Boil it for about 5 minutes to kill off any yeast there, and then pour it in and top it off. But frankly, for me, if that's all I have is extra apple juice, I often will just pour it in, especially early on in the game. Later on, I'll boil it to avoid re-fermenting. And of course, for someone like myself who's been cider making for a long time, I have at this point a lot of extra cider from last year that I could use to top off. Now, I try to find a very neutral cider. Sometimes I dedicate, like last year, I have a dedicated 5-gallon cider just sitting there, just to be used for topping off during racking. Again, you want to avoid that headspace. So that's about it. Another thing that some people do at this step is to add some sulfite. And the sulfite is just really it won't stop fermentation. You stop fermentation by slowly bringing it off of the yeast cells and letting it fully condition out. But the sulfites will help kind of keep away the nudgy stuff, other bacterias. So that could be an option too, to add some sulfite in there. And for my own home cider making deal, I go really super light. And if I was looking at a 5-gallon carboy, I would probably put in 1/8 teaspoon of powdered sulfite. So there you have it. That's one option you could do. Some people just want to go sulfite free, but I don't often take the chance. And it's so minimal, but it just, I don't know, maybe it's ridiculous. And other people right now, what I'm saying is probably nails on a chalkboard, but that's how I do it. I've had my luck. So there you have it. My boat, my rolls. So that's your equipment needed. When I come back, we're going to talk about just the process of racking cider, how you do it.
Kicking up our feet.
The first step to racking cider is to make sure that you have the room to do it. And typically, I set up my racking station the night before. Because as soon as you start moving around that vessel full of cider with all the lees on the bottom, all the lees start moving back into solution and it'll look really cloudy. That happens often to me. So I will grab that vessel of cider and I need to place it in a high enough elevation that it's going to be higher than the second vessel. So typically I might be on something as high as a nightstand next to a bed. I'm not doing this in my bedroom, mind you, but I'm just giving you a height, just to kind of cross-reference with. So something like the height of your bed and then having the secondary vessel on the floor. And the next day, I'm ready to go. And you begin the siphon. You could do it two ways. You could do it the old, well, use your mouth and suction it out, which is, well, tried and true, and I've done it many, many times. I have a really silly memory now, years ago, with a bunch of friends. We were just bottling so much cider and wine one day, and we're doing just that. You know, you're kind of like, one person's like creating the suction, you know, sucking it out of the tube and putting it in the other carboy and getting everything ready. But you do a lot of that, and you're going to be toasted really quickly, so be careful. The other thing is that you could use a racking cane, and that is something you want to look up online. I'll put a link in the show notes to a racking cane that you could get that stuff. And that just creates a siphon. It's a tool to create a siphon and you have your hose to it. And the key is not to put that racking cane or the tube too far into the carboy. You know, don't touch the bottom right away. And I always have an extra towel around because as you get lower and lower into the carboy as you're racking over, I want to tilt it. I want to be able to tilt the carboy up a little bit. It's great if you have a second hand nearby, but sometimes I'll just place a little towel underneath there to kind of hold the tilt in place. And that just gives you a little bit more mobility with the keeping the lees at the bottom and the actual cider separated from the lees. So you siphon that all the way over into your new carboy. If you're going to use sulfites, I recommend putting the sulfite in before you start racking so it can mix into solution as much as possible and not just be floating on the surface afterwards. And then you look at how much headspace you have. And typically you might have as much as 5 inches of headspace, and you're going to then pour some new cider, again, a neutral cider that won't overtake it. You don't want to put in like a fruit cider or a hop cider or, you know, something that's really has a dominant flavor into a cider that you're trying to keep its own profile with. And top that carboy up, at least leaving about an inch and a half of headspace up there. Put on your clean stopper and airlock. Make sure the airlock is filled with water. If you're in a really cold place where you are placing that carboy to continue conditioning for the next month or so, say like in a root cellar, maybe you might want to put in some alcohol like vodka into that airlock so you don't have to worry about it freezing, which has happened to me. Oh, so many mistakes I've had, but that's part of the fun of it. Somehow in the end, the beauty of cider is it all works out. I'm never without a full glass of cider, which is also a beautiful thing. And that's the steps. That's the steps for racking cider. Certainly make sure you have a glass nearby because as you're racking it over, you want to pour a little bit in your glass and taste it. And you might also want to check out the specific gravity. I'm not going to talk about that in much detail other than the specific gravity is something that you take in the beginning of your cider making, the first stage, and then as you go along, and it helps you see the process of the cider as it's turning to alcohol and helps you know when the cider has stopped fermenting and you're kind of safe to go to bottle it. But even if you have reached that point, myself and many cider makers like to leave their cider conditioning for quite a long period of time, even if the specific gravity stops, because there's some value I find in that bulk conditioning, and cider ages well. And as it ages, it gets more complexity. And so I often weigh, as you can see, last year's cider has not yet been bottled in my home. It will be in October. That is the goal. And then I probably won't be really drinking that in earnest another year from now. So that is my step. You might be drinking your cider sooner. I'm sure many of you do. But, you know, it's all good. And there's no really strict rules. It's what you want to do and how you like it.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. Oh, you gots to ski. It's a rat-a-tat-a, 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 bala. Rat-a-tat-a, 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 holla. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, beat me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, beat me a thank.
When it comes to the cheddar, instead of putting it under the cushion, put it on a plate and fill your glass with cider. It's styling. That's the way to do it. That's the way I enjoy it. Cheese and cider. A couple slices of pears and apples on the side. Ooh la la. That just screams September in New England where I live. It's a beautiful time of the year here. The colors are starting to change a bit. Starting to put the gardens away. And just getting hunkered down for the season ahead. But there's a lot more fall to be enjoying, a lot of different little mini events happening. Definitely support your local cider makers. Keep them in business during this time. Support your restaurateurs as much as you can and support each other. That is what it's all about, and that's what brings us, in the end, a whole bunch of good cheer. With that in mind, I'd like to, again, as always, tip my glass to the fine patrons of this here podcast who have joined the Cider Chat Patreon page. Become a patron, support Cider Chat to keep on producing episodes like this and so many wonderful episodes coming up. We have our German cider maker coming up. That's Barry Matterson. He'll be on the spotlight soon, a feature chat with Barry. That was fantastic. I'm still getting through some of the ciders he sent me, and I just want to say the barrel-aged cider Barry was, oh my God, it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I was just screaming out loud, and the happiness. So good chats ahead. Support the chat and keep it thriving on the line and keeping cider on everyone's radar, if you will. You could go to Patreon, that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You are cordially invited to follow Cider Chat on social media. I am on TikTok. There's a couple of videos up now, and soon I'm going to be posting, it might be even as soon as this episode goes live, an unboxing of Eden's new Deep Cut and Peak Bloom. These are two canned ciders. As they say, nothing but extraordinary apples, super delicious cider. And you'll see what food pairing I did with the Deep Cut. And that was a blend of Golden Russet, Somerset, Red Streak, Dabinet, Yarlington Mill, McIntosh, and Empire apples in this can. It's just so good. I mean, come on. Eden, everything Eden makes is fantastic. So check that out on TikTok and definitely join in on the fun. And from here, I'm going to leave you there. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Cider, we like palms, we love orchards and have having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!